So welcome to your third class on understanding Brexit, which I'm recording as per usual. I think it's quite a good subject actually, because obviously it's d'actualité, as you say, it's current affairs, but also it's a really quite complicated question, which does open up, I hope, some ways of looking at economic problems, political problems, cultural problems, and how they all get mixed up together. Now, I received an email last week from the British government, because I'm British in France, you can sign up for a newsletter. And this is what last week's newsletter included. Yeah? What's going to happen if there's no deal? We don't know if there will be a deal or no deal, but of course, if you're negotiating, you're obliged to show that you're ready for there to be no deal. Otherwise, you look desperate. And so they have brought out a huge number of directives as to what will happen if there's no deal. Accessing animal medicine information technology systems if there's no Brexit deal. Yeah, were you worried about that? No, okay, no, neither was I really. But I think it just shows, you know, a commercial road haulage in the EU if there's no Brexit deal. Buying and selling timber if there's no Brexit deal. Generating low carbon electricity if there's no Brexit deal. What this shows, I'm not going to talk about each one, mostly because I know nothing about them, is that after 40 years in the European Union, there are a lot of agreements and hundreds of agreements about details. You know, yeah. If you have a particular problem with a cow, a rare disease, you go onto the European system, organised by the European Union, and you get the information. So what happens if Britain's outside the European Union? There are literally hundreds of little problems, which are not impossible to deal with, but you know, it makes it all different. Importing and exporting plants if there's no Brexit deal. Flights to and from the UK if there's no Brexit deal. So the British government has been obliged to show that it is ready for a no-deal situation. The British government does not want a no-deal, but if you don't show that you're ready, you can't negotiate. That's just the way things work. So there you get a whole load of those. Copyright if there's no Brexit deal. So, all those as well. Yeah, vehicle insurance, protecting geographical food and drink names. For the moment, if you produce sparkling white wine in Britain, you are not allowed to call it champagne. Because the word champagne, or champagne, is reserved for a particular region of France. And that is a European Union agreement. So in theory, after Brexit, a British producer can produce wine and call it champagne. This is how to lose all your French friends at once, I think. Yeah, it would be not considered a great thing. It's like, you know, and the French could start making cheese and calling it cheddar. Yeah, and then there'll be a real war. Or maybe not. But those are some of the things that are going on there. So what I'm going to do now today, I think today is the last full class about Brexit, because it's interesting, but not that interesting. But first of all, I'm going to go through some of the things which happened this week. And then we're going to watch a couple of videos. And then I'm going to look at some of the other options for trade deals that are being bandied around. Welcome. But I did just want to say one more thing, and that is that when you look at the discussion in the media about the question, you often get the impression that there is one British interest. Yeah, that the British people have all the same interest. And this might not necessarily be true. Of course, people often imagine that growth in the economy, if the economy grows by 2%, that this is good. And in some ways it is, but if at the same time unemployment grows, it's not so good for those people. And this was shown this week in the Labour Party conference, where the discussion was about a people's Brexit. That is to say, a Brexit in the interest of whom? Theresa May, the Prime Minister, has said that she would like Britain outside the European Union to have the lowest company tax in the world, which might attract companies, but it might also mean that there's less money coming in for hospitals, schools, and so on. Yeah, so it is a political question and not just a technical economic question. So this week, what's happened this week? First of all, there was the Conservative Party conference, which was, and in fact, I was invited onto France 24 television to talk about it. And one of these amazing things was this gentleman, Boris Johnson, made an incredible attack on Theresa May. Incredible. First of all, he said that her plan was deranged. Sangly. Okay, Sampa. And secondly, he did this this meme where he photographed himself running through a field of corn. And this is a historical thing to mock Theresa May personally. So they're going down to individual sarcastic mockery. That was one of the things that was happening this week. But there were a number of other things happening this week. For example, a lot of people who are against Brexit are talking about the terrible effects that Brexit will have. It's very difficult to know what is true and what is not true. But here you have UK music stars rail against Brexit in an open letter to Theresa May. And so a series of music stars. This is very unusual, yeah? When was the last time a group of musicians wrote a letter to the Prime Minister? It's not very rock and roll in general. It's, oh, yeah, I can't get no satisfaction, so I've got to write to the Prime Minister. You know, it just doesn't quite fit there. But then they do celebrate it. That leaving the EU will wreak havoc. Now, it will be a disaster. You know, they only just noticed it's now, but there you go. This happened this week. And you get even worse here. Brexit could bring booming industry to its knees. And this is it's an interesting case because perhaps you know, but in fact, music makes a lot of money for the British economy. It's a big, big, big industry. As you can tell, if you try to ask your friends how many Portuguese music groups they know and how many British ones. Yeah, the Britain, for a small country, is relatively successful, even today, which is I don't really know quite why. I suspect it's because all young people in Britain are in a music group, and 99.9% are very bad, but there are some good ones. Yeah, I think that may be the method, that there's just this mass installation. So this is this week. The UK music stars who are worried that the music industry will not survive. We will see. Another newspaper warning about the dangers of Brexit. Hard Brexit risks UK status as a gateway to Europe for Japan as companies size up new site. Now, some of the vocabulary is difficult here. Size up. Ça veut dire prospecter, donc ils regardent des nouveaux sites. To size up, c'est mesurer pour voir. And this, I think I mentioned it to you last week. If you're a Japanese company making washing machines and you want to sell them in Europe and you want a headquarters in Europe with 200 Japanese managers in it, you put it in London because they speak English and half the Japanese speak English. You don't put it in Paris because, you know, it's very hard to get experienced managers to go with their family to a place where they don't speak the language. There's a big advantage here. And it's saying that, you know, if there is a hard Brexit, then London, in particular, will no longer be the special place for Japan to get into Europe. We don't know. Again, we don't know. It's possible. It's possible that this would be a problem. And businesses consider moving to continental Europe. I don't know if you would prefer them to come to France or not. I'm afraid that they will probably go to Germany or to Amsterdam because everybody speaks English. And of course, the people in this room, I'm sure your English is excellent. But the general situation of the French economy is that the record was, I was listening to the radio the other day, and the French Minister for European Affairs, Loiseau, elle s'appelle, and she pronounces these two words, condemned and condoned, and she pronounces them in the same way. Condamner et soutenir. Dommage. Okay, I'm sure you wouldn't do something like that. Let's see, what else has happened this week? What? There was a demonstration of dogs who went to Parliament to demonstrate against Brexit. And now, of course, it was the dog owners. Anti-Brexit dog owners are to take their pets on a march to Parliament on Sunday to call for a second vote on EU membership. And of course, because these are British newspapers, they couldn't resist that they are asking for a second wooferendum. So that the Brexit has obviously given opportunities for people with not very good humour to print it in newspapers. So, slightly ridiculous, but very British. I mean, they like to do humorous things. That was all this week. This is all just this week's events. This week's events. The situation, I already explained the situation with Scotland and the Brexit referendum. That is that Scotland voted, but quite closely a few years ago, against the independence of Scotland, and the majority of Scottish people voted to stay inside the European Union, where they feel that Scotland has more relative weight rather than being just stuck in a corner with England. And this demonstration was for a second referendum for Scottish independence. And it was quite big. This is it's not a very small thing. So this is just a sign that that particular problem is not solved yet. It's on a slow burner because both of the big parties, the Conservative Party leadership and the Labour Party leadership, are not in favour of independence for Scotland. So that makes it very difficult for them. And as I mentioned last week, the nationalists hesitate to have a second referendum because if they lose it, then they may be dead. A couple more things. So there is the Scottish National Party leader, Nicola Sturgeon. So she's the leader of the Scottish nationalists in favour of independence. And her new line is that they would like to have a second referendum vote, but they would want, before supporting a second referendum, they would seek a guarantee that if Scotland voted again to remain in the EU, it would not be forced to accept the result. Yeah, that this is probably a little bit, as you say in French, faussement naive. Yeah, it's a little, because it is absolutely impossible that the London government would agree to this. So sometimes you demand things when you know they're going to say no, for the demonstration effect, you know, to show people what's going on. So that's still very hard. I was surprised this week that so many people were still talking about a second referendum. It still seems to me to be extremely unlikely. If you have neither the Conservative Party leadership nor the Labour Party leadership in favour, for different reasons, the Conservative Party leadership is not in favour of a new referendum. Well, perhaps the same reason, because it would severely divide their party. The Labour Party leader is not in favour of a referendum for two reasons. Firstly, it would severely divide his party, but also he has always been critical of the neoliberal aspects of the European Union. Last event for this week. Of course, let's have a look at the other side, because on one side you have Theresa May and the British trying desperately to negotiate, and on the other side you have 27 united countries. Or do you? Because of course, business is business, and although France is a tremendously good friend of Germany, business is business, and so Macron invited this week directors of UK car companies to come to Paris and have a nice dinner and some champagne, real champagne, and discuss. Don't you think it would be nice to move some of your factories to France? Wouldn't that be a good idea? It could be a serious simplification. I mean, if there is a different, if you build a car today, you have this part comes from Croatia, this part comes from China. And so on. Yeah, that's how it works. And so while you're in the European Union, then you have stability around tariffs. Now, the European Union has decided it's the same. Once Britain is outside the European Union, they could say, the part that you're getting from China, 20% tariff. They could. And companies don't like uncertainty, so it's not a ridiculous idea. And of course, Macron wants to be sure that if the car companies in Britain leave Britain, they don't go to Germany or Italy, but they come to France, yes? And so there he is. He stepped up attempts to attract UK business. So they were invited to dinner, probably at McDonald's, yeah? I think they probably took them to McDonald's, maybe Pizza Hut. Yeah, Pizza Hut, you know, McDonald's, or maybe not. Meanwhile, other countries around the world are also trying to, they also have elites obviously trying to benefit from the situation. And here we have the Japanese Prime Minister. The United Kingdom would be welcome to join the Pacific Trade Pact. So yes, to have a trade union with Japan. Would be Britain would be welcomed with open arms. Yeah. Also, everything's happening this week. It's a major crisis. But you did get some words of reassurance, at least for reassurance for people who don't like crises. The head of the European Union said Brexit deal could be done in the next fortnight. So is it, that 2 weeks ago it was, you know, I think there will be no deal, I think there will be no deal, and now we don't know, so that we get the Brexit deal could be done in the next fortnight is the final bit of news for this week. Now, before I go back to where I was last week, I do have a little video for you. One of the central aspects of the European Union is the common agricultural policy for farmers, and in particular farmers in France, Italy and Spain, which are big agricultural countries. And this has always been a little bit of a source of tension with Britain, where Britain got most of its food from New Zealand and Australia and the United States. However, we do have farmers in Britain, mostly dairy farmers and chicken farmers. And so this is a short documentary, What Will Brexit Mean for British Farmers? If it wants to open. I will see if it does in a moment. So just give it time. This is not fast stuff. And because it's a British documentary, you won't be surprised to see that they decide to do it in a rather humorous style, of course. This is the BBC, I think. And they begin with the opening credits of Jack and Ori, which was a children's program. A children's program for reading fairy stories to children, and it always began, "Are you sitting comfortably? Then I'll begin. Once upon a time, etc." So this is actually, it's a serious documentary about what will happen to farmers in Brexit, but it begins like a children's story because this is the normal thing to do in Britain, to be humorous.
"Ah, hello. Are you sitting comfortably? Then I'll begin. Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits. Now, my dears," said old Mrs. Rabbit one morning, "don't go into Mr. McGregor's garden. Your father had an accident there. He was put in a pie by Mrs. McGregor."
The words of Beatrix Potter, author of The Tale of Peter Rabbit and many other popular children's stories. In fact, it was her great success as an author which helped finance her passion for farming. By the time she died in 1943, she had 4,000 acres, including 14 farms, and her home here, Hilltop, all of which she left to the National Trust. As a prominent farmer, we can only wonder what Potter, or maybe even her characters, would have made of the EU, Brexit, and of course the next unwritten chapter of British farming.
"Who should Peter meet? But Mr. McGregor. Peter was most dreadfully frightened. He rushed all over the garden looking for the Brexit. He ran straight into a messy tangle of red tape."
Beatrix Potter's farms can be found in the Lake District, where resilience and innovation are as important as ever.
There are farmers in Scotland, in Wales, here in the Lake District, that really, really struggle.
John Watson is a tenant farmer at Yew Tree Farm, which was one of Beatrix Potter's. He uses this to attract tourism, which supplements his income. He voted to remain in the EU.
"Life's very uncertain at the moment. What's happening with Brexit is going to have a huge, huge impact on these sorts of farms. I don't make any money. I struggle year in, year out, trying all the different forms of diversification to try and bring money in, because I'm one of these idiots that actually loves farming. I love working with animals. I love being out in this beautiful countryside. As a fell farmer, I cannot survive without subsidy. There, I've said it, I need the subsidy.
The Common Agricultural Policy was designed to boost productivity. Controversially, the subsidies are based on how much land is owned, not on what a farm produces. UK farmers received €3.1 billion last year.
Pickles ran the village shop and gave subsidies to the local farmers. While some people really liked Pickles' payments, others got fed up with being told what to do and won't be dipping into Pickles' pot any longer.
So far, the UK government has pledged to replace EU funding until 2020. Now, at the grassroots, including here in Exmoor, farmers must consider carefully how to survive in a dramatically changing landscape.
It's being called the biggest farming conversation for a generation. Before the EU referendum, the industry was largely divided. But now it's united in looking for opportunity in a post-Brexit world. One question for the farmers who did vote out is, what is more alluring than free money?
She can just leave her. Nothing in this life is free. And as we were discovering with EU payments, they were asking for more and more for their free money.
The Miltons voted to leave the EU, with the young especially keen. A different story, perhaps, to the national narrative, which suggested that many younger Remainers were at odds with their parents and grandparents.
I listened to some of the next generation, and they were saying, we need a few opportunities, and the only time opportunities arrive is when you have change.
The way I looked at Brexit was, what's the worst that could happen? We'd have to sell the farm because we couldn't make it pay. If you've got the right attitude, you will do something with it. I'll quite happily take risk.
I don't know if you're going to like me for this, but I don't want to kick older farmers out, but I think there's a lot there that don't want to let go. The cap has kept them in a farm where maybe they should have let a youngster take it over.
The Miltons all feel the burden of red tape, but accept that it must be endured. They hope that after Brexit, it will be better tailored to the UK's farmers.
Is the government doing enough to support you?
No, there's a feeling not at the moment, and I feel the government's lost the focus on what the value of agriculture and landscape has been.
In 1984, New Zealand's farming industry was transformed when its government scrapped most subsidies. Diversification and intensification were embraced and productivity increased. But there's also been criticism, as many environmental rules were relaxed. In the UK, farmers are responsible for environmental upkeep. Upland and fell farmers look after hedgerow, stone walls and watercourses.
It costs roughly £15 a metre. It's an expensive occupation to maintain hedges. Cheap alternative, a wire fence, like said there. No aesthetic value, no environmental value, but like in New Zealand, practical, does the job, keeps the livestock in. Those responsibilities are for the benefit of the public as well. So there's an expectation, if we're going to help you, just help us stay there to do so.
I'd like to think we could do without any subsidy at all, but that's utter madness, really, if you want us to preserve the heritage of Exmoor. You can't destroy Exmoor because, as farmers, we want to all be millionaires.
Yet some environmental campaigners say that farmers are not doing enough to justify the financial support they're asking for.
We see very, very low productivity. One sheep per hectare, one sheep per 2 hectares, one sheep per 5 hectares. Almost nothing being produced, and yet almost no wildlife either, because the sheep are a fully automated system for maximum environmental destruction. You just let them loose in the hills and they nibble everything away. Trees can't grow, wildlife can't return. I'm not talking about taking away all sheep, I'm just saying
that stopped paying for this damage. In the middle of a lake, there was an island. Twinkleberry and his squirrel friends visited the island, which belonged to Old Brown the Owl. "Will you favour us with work gathering your apples and cabbages? We're very efficient."
James Hook's hatcheries produce a third of the chickens eaten in the UK. He voted Remain, but he doesn't rely on subsidies. Chicken and pig farmers don't get them. He relies on people.
We employ 2,500 people across the country in our hatcheries and on our farms. About 20% of those are coming from Europe, quite a lot of Eastern European people, and that's made a massive difference to our business and enabled us to grow. I'm concerned that because of the devaluation of the pound, the money is now not as good as it was. People are not made to feel welcome. And more importantly at all, will they be allowed to come in?
James has already closed 2 facilities because of a shortage of willing workers.
Will we have the labour to work on our farms? Will our customers have the labour to work in their factories? Will we have the labour to come and help pluck the turkeys at Christmas? Because if we haven't got it, we can't continue.
Tommy Brock was a short, bristly, fat, waddling badger. Today he was complaining bitterly about the scarcity of bananas with abnormal curvature. "I am quite sick of straight bananas."
Membership of the EU spawned many a myth. Now it's time to face the realities of leaving. Ensuring food security is a priority. Can enough be produced by UK farmers to feed the country affordably? Peter Kendall is an arable farmer who owns 2,000 acres in Bedfordshire and manages a further 3,000. He voted to remain and is now concerned about an influx of cheap imports.
There's a real nervousness with too many, I think quite prominent politicians now, are advocating cheap food. And if they think they're going to scavenge the world for the cheapest possible beef, lamb, grains, dairy products, I think you could see the British countryside massively changed. The environment would be damaged and would produce a lot less food.
Article 50 will be triggered within days. Then the long wait for results. Farming, like other industries, will need to toil hard to be heard during the government's negotiations. Peter Rabbit's been brought into the 21st century, and there's a desire for a newer, shinier version of modern British farming. Whether farmers voted for Brexit or not, leaving could offer the industry the opportunity to make positive changes.
We need to move to a world where we're seen to be entrepreneurial businessmen producing for the market. But we do have that reputation of being paid to do nothing.
We've actually got a really short period to come up with a domestic policy that understands what farming in the UK is all about.
They won't be throwing money at farmers anymore. I do love the old-fashioned ways of farming. I embrace them. But I'm not stuck there. I can move.
And that, dear viewers, looks like the end of our tale. But of course it isn't. This story will go on and on and on.
Yes, okay, now perhaps you heard that this documentary is 2 years old. It was just after the decision. But the general problems of the farmers haven't changed. And there they noted a few worries that farmers have. One was they get a lot of workers from Eastern Europe who come to pick the fruit and to work in the hatcheries with the chickens. And there are a number of difficulties already. Later on, there may be difficulties because we don't know what rights Romanians and Bulgarians will have to go to Britain. But there are already difficulties. Did you catch why there are already difficulties getting people? Because the pound sterling has gone down. And so the money is not so good anymore. Yeah, if you come from Bulgaria and you work in England, you get, you know, I don't know, £1,000. Before, that was an awful lot of money, and now it's 15% less. So it can make a difference. I think they do still attract some people because the working in Poland or in Romania, is the wages are very low indeed. That was one thing that came up. Secondly, they came up with this, they talked about the responsibilities of farmers, that farmers don't just look after the sheep. They also, they receive money on condition that they repair the walls, they repair the hedges, and they protect the countryside. So this is a political decision, a national decision. How much money does the country want to spend to protect the countryside so that when we want to go for a walk or a holiday, that it can be national decisions there. Okay. Any questions about the farmers? They have some nice accents as there in addition. Okay, so where were we? Yes, couple. Last week I spoke about two of the options after leaving the European Union. One was the Norway option, and the other was the Swiss option. And finally, the preferred option of the government, which is a bespoke deal, that is a made-to-measure deal. And Theresa May has developed one, but the European Union members are not very interested, and her own party does not really agree, and the Parliament will probably not vote for it, but otherwise everything's fine. Yeah. So here are the details on the bespoke agreement. It's not predictable. We don't know exactly what there will be inside, as each side will seek to protect their interests. Probably any deal which was negotiated would still mean that the UK would have to pay money to the EU, which is, of course, normal. If they're wanting certain advantages, they have to pay money. However, they would not be subject to the European Court of Justice. Now, the European Court of Justice generally deals with questions between companies. Yeah? It's not about murderers and most tribunals deal with companies, in fact. For example, and we might look at a video on it in a moment, there was the European Court of Justice just made a decision about the company Uber. I'm sure you know the company Uber. Does anybody people here, do you use Uber? Yeah, the taxi thing? Okay. Did you see the European Court of Justice decision? Yeah. Okay, there was a European Court of Justice decision about the people who work for Uber and their rights to a pension, to pension contributions and so on. Yeah, so the whole question of that kind of thing will be discussed. And the deal will have to come to, if there is a deal, they will have to come to agreements on goods and services, persons, contracts. And that also means the tribunals, because if you write a contract between a French company and a British company, in the contract there is always, if there is a disagreement, you must go to the French courts, or to the British courts, or to the European courts. But in the contract, it's always written. That's part of the negotiations. We want the British courts to be in charge if there's a disagreement. No, we prefer the French courts, etc. That's part of the deal. Data protection, funding and taxation and regulation. So a huge number of things to negotiate in. You don't need to learn the list. Yeah, it's not about lists. I'm not too worried about lists. But that's what they would like to do. But it's not looking good. But then again, maybe next week I will be able to tell you that they found a deal. Every day there is something happening here. Now, some of the... I just have a few important questions to finish with, and one of them is whether outside the European Union, London will still be a world centre in services. Now that's a rather important element of the UK economy. If you look around your house at the television and the chairs and tables, and you look for things which were made in Britain, there might be some, but there won't be a lot. Yeah, that the British economy is not based on goods. However, if you look in the small print of the insurance on your mobile phone, you may well find London at the bottom, yeah. London is the centre of world insurance, and insurance is big money, very, very big money, yeah. The Musée des Beaux-Arts à Rouen, when they organise an exhibition of these amazing paintings, half the price of the exhibition is insurance. Insurance is a big thing, yeah, because they're so valuable. You travel, you go across the world with a Picasso, you have to pay a lot of insurance, yeah. And this is London has a specialised art insurance, and it's a very, very big insurance software. There's quite a lot of production of software in Britain. Again, of course, they've got the advantage of the language. Even video games, although the French have a good, there's a good number of French video game companies, but there's also some going on in London. So will London still be a world centre in services? Well, the impact depends on the Brexit deal, if there is one, eventually negotiated with passport rights. Now, passport rights is the rights for a financial firm or a bank to operate freely in another country. So Britain, the British elite, the British government, would obviously be very happy to say, okay, we're leaving the European Union, but we would still like the right to operate our banks and insurance in Europe, please. Okay, and of course they'll say, well, maybe, but you must do this, this, and this, this, and this, this, the way it goes. So that will be quite a big deal. Now again, this is a question more for companies because there's a political question here as well. Because if you go to, you know, to ordinary people in the streets in London or in Manchester, you say, okay, it looks like the City of London is going to make much less money next year. People might say, oh, no, I don't care. Because when the City of London made billions and billions and billions of dollars, a lot of people didn't see it, yeah. So it's not necessarily in the interest of everybody in the country. London, however, does retain many strengths. The first thing is, of course, if you have the biggest insurance industry in the world, you can't just move it to Frankfurt or move it to Paris because you don't have enough experts. Yeah, there are thousands of experts in insurance in London, and insurance is a complicated thing. And so London retains many strengths. Firstly, large pool of highly skilled labour, financial services, accounting and law. You have experts in insurance law. It doesn't sound very interesting to me, but I understand that if you want to remain the centre of insurance, you need a lot of people who know about it. And so there is no immediate danger of Paris taking over on that one, because they wouldn't have enough people who are experts. And secondly, of course, the biggest one, language. The English language is an enormous strength. Apparently, I don't know why, but I was told that the UK legal system is well organised to deal with questions of insurance and accounting because they do it so much. And finally, apparently, it's a convenient time zone. I don't know why this is, but if you work in London, you can more easily deal with both America and Japan, which are the two big ones. Apparently, I'm not quite sure what the hours difference with Paris makes, but there you go. I understand that if you were in Australia, this would be a problem. The things. Okay. Otherwise, I already mentioned then that the Labour Party. Yes, maybe. you don't write down every word. It's not necessary. Yeah. So, London strengths: Labour, language, time zone. That's enough. You're being too good students. Don't be so good. Okay. Yes, I mentioned that the question of the Labour Party is coming up. It is also going to be very important because Jeremy Corbyn. Okay, Jeremy Corbyn, the leader of the Labour Party, is a very unusual leader. He's probably closer to Jean-Luc Mélenchon than to François Hollande, so a very left-wing leader, which adds in additional uncertainty. We don't know what's going to happen. And so the European Union, they're not very happy with Theresa May's demands, But on the other hand, Angela Merkel, Emmanuel Macron, do they really want Jeremy Corbyn at the head of the British government negotiating? Probably not. So there is also there's not just national questions, there's also political questions. And this is Jeremy Corbyn giving a speech last week. And as you can see, he has some success. Yeah. Because if I give a speech, I only get this number of people, and you're obliged to be here. You know, they're not even obliged to be there. So Jeremy Corbyn is an interesting case. If there is another election, which is not impossible, it's quite possible, I'm not promising, but it's quite possible that Theresa May will take her agreement to the British Parliament, and the British Parliament will vote no, and there will be a general election in January, and Jeremy Corbyn could win it, which would make everything even more unpredictable. Yeah, this is a genuine crisis, it's not a pretend one. So this is Jeremy Corbyn's position. He said that wealthy elites are trying to hijack Brexit. He's very worried that results of Brexit will be Theresa May saying, we're going to keep taxes low, we won't let there be any strong trade unions, etc., in order to attract people. So let me just read this article about what Jeremy Corbyn said. The Labour leader earlier told activists that the question of whether the UK would leave the EU had been settled, and the task now was to act in the national interest and not show who can be toughest with Brussels. Okay, so you can see there he is saying that he does not want a second referendum. The question is settled. Repeating his argument that the economy was rigged against ordinary people, he said a Labour government would take action against asset strippers, tax evaders, and those who ripped off workers and consumers. So that's another element here. I'm not going to read it all. Finally, a few humorous approaches to Brexit. Here is a cartoon by a cartoonist who wants a second referendum because he presents it as two options. You can go to a second referendum or you can go to hell. So clear there. And here you have Brexit. This is Britannia attached. They are going to hell, and all of this is going to be destroyed. The Good Friday Agreement, that is peace in Northern Ireland, the end of the civil war in Northern Ireland, will be destroyed. This is his opinion, of course. The car industry, the National Health Service, financial services, and this is Theresa May. You can recognise the shoes. You can recognise the shoes. And so this is the... Je ne sais pas pourquoi j'ai mis anti-Brexit. I see anti-Brexit cartoon, oui, c'est ça. This is obviously a humorous but extreme suggestion that, you know, we are going to hell. Yeah, so this is not a moderate intellectual argument. Yeah, we're going to hell. And the option, the opposite side, the pro-Brexit cartoon, is identifying this person who loves Europe, who voted for Remain. And so, of course, they would normally be a Remainer, but they've changed the word to Remoaner. To moan is to complain, to whine, like children. It's not fair. Yeah. And so the pro-Brexit people are saying, aha, they're just babies crying. The people who are asking for a second referendum are just babies crying. Now, you can see one of the problems here. That is that very often the debate is carried on a very emotional level where the quality of the arguments is not really the problem. And it's just you're stupid. No, you're stupid. Which, that's unfortunate because it doesn't help you understand it. And although I don't think I hid my own opinion, I hope that I managed to give you some arguments on both sides. We have some more here. Is this in favour of Brexit or against Brexit? Is this meme in favour of Brexit or against Brexit? Against. It's against Brexit because it's saying, you know, you can have English food, yeah, baked beans, or you can have European food, yeah, French wine and pastries and it's mostly French actually. There you go. Something. So you know, if you go for Brexit, you will just be eating baked beans. Sounds okay to me. I don't see what the problem is. Anyway, and on the other side here, you have an pro-Brexit arguments, where you can see the European Union dealing with Greece, and they have obliged them to sell all the nationalised industries to destroy the health service, and the Greek people have nothing less, and yet the European Union is saying, more austerity, you need to tighten your belt. Yeah, so the European Union is presented as a neoliberal power crucifying the Greek people. And just two more there, parts of the debate this week, a heated debate. UK could run out of food. There will be no more food after Brexit. That's probably not true, you know. I don't really think that Britain will have no food. And on the other hand, then the other side of it there. Just for this from this week, just to illustrate one more time the temperature of the debate. Here you have the Foreign Secretary of Britain saying that that the European Union is like the Soviet Union. C'est le chef de la diplomatie anglaise, il faut le faire quand même. So yeah, the lesson from history is clear. If you turn the EU club into a prison, the desire to get out won't diminish, it will grow, and we won't be the only prisoner that will want to escape. Yeah, this is the diplomats, yeah, so you can imagine what the rest of them are like. And I think we will probably see more of this. This is a major crisis. And we're going to have just a 5-minute break right now.